I'm Taylor. This is Leadership Line of Sight. And we have, well, she goes by Samantha G. Wolf. I know her as Samantha or Sam Wolf. And what are we going by? I know that you're the founder of Pitch Forward. I understand that you are the co-author of an amazing book that was released just this week called Metaversed, right? For those people that are getting beyond the hype. And I also know that you as like the chief marketing officer of the entire tech community. Or the chief network officer, I should say.
Yeah. I mean, it's more that sometimes I do feel like, you know, I've learned more and more how good or bad people within the emerging tech industry are at communicating what they do. So sometimes I have to go, no. Let me write something, some kind of explainer. Explainer document to just be like, this is what it is. Let's all just sort of understand.
Yeah, but like as someone who did get to meet you, I think it was South by Southwest 2018. Okay. I have to say that there's a reason that you're so popular. You know, we kind of walk on to this kind of a campus setting where you're giving a talk. And then afterwards, we just kind of cruise down the street. And do you remember that day we met Guy Kiyosaki?
Oh, yes. I got really excited to meet him. There, so this is what I've said. There's a few people that I literally get, like, I like jump up and down and start like clapping excited to meet. And he was one of them because I had sort of followed him and I was like, oh, he's here. And I could tell he was like, who are you? Like, what is going on? I was just so thrilled to be around, because there's just certain people that get me. I mean, I'm generally very excited about emerging tech and what's possible, but then there are other people that just with what they say and what they put out there, like just make me think differently. Like right now I'm completely, shall we say, obsessed with like Sam Altman. And I'm like, I need to learn everything about him now. And like what he says and what he does and watch videos and all that kind of stuff. So that's the new person that I would probably jump up and down if I happened to see on the street.
So that's like, you have these gripping things. Is this about your own development? Is there like something that you see in your next horizon that these people already like capture?
No, I think that, well, I mean, so I did one of those tests once of like, what drives you? Like what gets you? And I was like, and the one that like bubbled to the top, which was the most, it's sort of obvious, was love of learning. And so emerging tech in and of itself is all about constantly learning and evolving. And so so it's the people that I am going, wait a second, I hadn't thought of it that way. Oh, that's sort of interesting. And they're just this, I don't know. I mean, I meet a ton of them, but there are a few people that are just like, again and again and again. And then at that point, that's where I get the like jump up and down. They go, yeah. Who is this woman? Like, does she actually know what she's talking about? And then it takes a couple of meetings or a couple of conversations mm-hmm. before they go, oh, yes, actually. Like Curtis Hickman of The Void definitely was like, who is this person? Like, I don't understand where she's coming from. And then now we can like message and I'll be like, what's going on? That they realize that it is actually coming from a place of genuine passion and enthusiasm for what's possible.
Well, that's an interesting point that you make, because I generally believe that some of the people that are like intense experts, they have a filter, which is, are you switched on? Like, I think that there's a lot of professors out there and doctors that don't really want to teach kindergarten. And everybody runs up to them like this. I think that, you know what? I hope I'm there when you get that Guy Kiyosaki moment. where like somebody runs up and their energy is just like, you know, they're so stoked to see you, right?
I had that at South by once where I like went by and they're like, you're Sam Wolf. And I was like, what? Like there's one person in the entire planet that was excited that I didn't recognize, that recognized me. And that was sort of, was sort of, you know, fun to have the one person do that. But for me, it's really just, I like to give people that sort of moment of understanding some kind of new technology in a way that resonates for themselves. And usually it's the people who don't necessarily get technology or a little bit nervous about it or just whatever. Like they're sort of like, wait, this is confusing. And then if I can ask enough questions or have a like sort of enough of a conversation to figure out what's interesting, then I know that at some point they do the, huh, wait, does this mean? And I'm like, yes, I'm like, I got them. And I've done that with the students that I teach as an adjunct. I'm attempting to do that with the book for, you know, explaining the metaverse to every, I mean, I said, it's like writing about the internet before the internet. And it's like, this is going to change everything. And let me explain how. And so it's even, I don't know, for me, it's even more fun when it's somebody who's very, very senior, a senior executive, who is like, I don't need to know this. Like, I don't need to understand this. Like, that's for like somebody else to understand. And then once they get it, like once they understand conceptually what it's all about, then it's really, it's fun to see them do, maybe not outwardly like, oh my gosh, yes, that's so cool. Like, but like their mind is doing that. Their mind is like, oh wait, that implies this, that implies that. And what is sort of is that it gets to the point where, oops, did I lose it? Like, it gets to the point where eventually they start seeing maybe some of the well, what happens if, like the negatives, like, well, what happens if? And I'm like, oh, now you're really getting it. And it's okay to have those kind of the positive potential of the technology and the sort of like implications and negative implications. And in the book, we sort of try to balance the two. Although Kent Bai's like review of it was like mentioned something about being like overly optimistic. I don't remember the exact words. And I was like, that is not the first nor the last time that I am going to be called that. But I'm also willing to have the conversations about where could it go wrong and how do you solve for it? Cause that's just business.
Things aren't. We do need the critics, but they can kind of sit in the caboose. That's like where they fit on the train. What I mean by that is that if the people that are creating and building things are negative like that, nothing gets built. The engine of this train is optimism. It's positivity. It's people saying, I know that nobody's ever hit that mark. That's why I want to hit it.
Well, I think that, yeah, I mean, I like to, if I ever got a PhD, which there's a part of me that sort of wants to, like, I want to study innovators and innovation and the whole market around it. Because I personally love the people when I come up to them, when I come up to like a Guy Kawasaki or if I ever get the chance, maybe a Sam Altman, to just go like, okay, I need to like take you in.
I want to have a conversation here.
And so, like I did that this week with Matt Meisnix, who sold like 6D.ai, and had a conversation with him. And I was like, oh, now I'm starting to see how things fit together. And what I've realized that I can do, which I can do sort of differently, like I'm not a creator in the sense of a development kind of creator, but what I can do, which works in concert with somebody who is an innovator, and I've met so many, is that I can go, okay, who is this for? And I can sort of get some of that from the executive, like where, like what are the potential target audiences? And then I can go and research those potential target audiences and then make the connections as to how to potentially message or talk to them in a way that resonates. And I do that sort of clearly like on a one-on-one level with a lot of things, but it's fun to be able to do it in a, it's never been done before. So like you couldn't do a focus group. Like you can't go and say, will architecture companies love this product? Yes or no. You know, they won't know about some new product, some new metaverse, right? They won't be able to like imagine what's possible, but I can sort of figure out how to bridge that and say, you know what really resonates for, you know, this group of people is these kinds of words, this kind of messaging, this kind of thing. And then we can just talk in their language so that they can sort of get it and they can have those like, wait, so that means that changes this or that. I mean, with a book, I'm trying to do it for everyone at all times in every situation to relate it to business, which is a little bit ambitious. But that's why in the middle chapters, this chapter 8, which was my personal opus in the middle of it, it's like 60 pages, is like trying to address, I think we have like over 20 industries. So it's like, so if anybody could pick it up and at least go there and say, okay, these are the ways that these technologies might be able to change or influence what, you know, what I do if they're an executive. So,
okay. I want to unpack
it. It's sort of fun.
It does look fun. And so I want to add some background here and say, when you say adjunct, you're referring to you being an adjunct professor, right?
Yes. So I'm an adjunct professor at NYU Steinhardt. I'm in my third year teaching, and my fourth original class in 3 years. So I did a business of AR and VR to start, a marketing of emerging technologies, because I believe it's different for, you know, some of the reasons that I just outlined, and then an avatars and virtual humans class, and then a business of the metaverse class. So I'm sort of excited to see people starting to talk about avatars and virtual humans, because I was like, oh, I took a bet on making that a class, and it's cool to see that the conversations are happening more. That's where it's going to evolve, I think, from the conversational and generational AI discussions, that you go, okay, now embody it, turn it into a being. And it's like, oh, that's where it's going.
So this is super interesting to me, and I want to keep adding some background in here. And then you were talking about what you do for companies when they're making solutions, but they don't understand the market doesn't see the solution. They need this, like what we now call edutainment, but they need someone to tell them in a great way. And this is where it creates a setup for a lot of the way that I see you engage, which is that you understand these people that are super technical, and you also understand these people that are not.
Yes.
And you bridge it. Yes. Now, over your shoulder, if we were looking from what we see right to left here, we would see incredibly technical books slide all the way over to children's books. And this is the same parallel. Like, you package messages.
Yeah, and even like there's like high, like sort of high art kind of things too. I mean, yeah. I like to help people to understand. I mean, I like, and not in a way that makes anybody feel bad about it. Like, these things are constantly changing, and most people don't like to admit that they don't know something. So I'm sort of like, okay, you don't have to tell anybody else, but like, we can talk about it. Like, and then like you can look at the book, or we can have a conversation behind doors, and then you can go and, you know, present yourself as like, I knew this all along. I mean, that's really, it's sort of respect on both sides, right? It's respect for the developers and creators on like, you're creating the future. I put in the dedication in the book, like to all those who are like creating, I don't know the exact words, but like all those are creating future, like, let's do this. Like, I just love that group, but I also understand the people that are outside of it who are just like, I don't know what this is. Like, it's like, I just, I have to go and like make decisions about, you know, like business that money, like we have to just make money now. So all you're talking about the future is just like way too far in advance. It doesn't have anything, you know, that's relevant to me. And then, so we go, okay, well, what are you trying to do? What is relevant to them? And then we bring it together. And sometimes you can do that. Like, I do that one-on-one a lot. Other times it's just, you know, what are the, in a lot of cases, especially with, you know, companies that are at limited budget, because they're still early going when it comes to, you know, proving the market. Like, they haven't proven the market yet. that you are using your own channels, like you're using your website and your social media, and you're using any sort of speaking engagements, and using that as sort of getting some of that, the thought leadership out there or the education out there first before you get those leads, because they'll come. But it's easier to not be in that sort of uncomfortable, I don't know what this tech does. And so I'm just like, let's like shorten that period of time of like, I don't know what the tech does, to like, let's now actually talk about like investing or buying or whatever it might be. And I know that I can sort of reduce that time.
And you do, like when you take a look at interacting with the world, I think that a lot of people don't understand the problem. And here's how I see the problem, but correct me if I'm wrong, is that outside in the general world, almost like mediocre ideas are so well represented that we get tricked into buying shitty stuff all the time. And then you step over to tech and you watch these brilliant ideas die on the shelf because these poor people can't talk about it. Like they can't explain to the world why.
Yes. Well, I always look at there's the like Simon Sinek, like Get to the Why book. And I loved that as a concept. He has like TED Talk that I showed in both of my classes this semester, like at the beginning, just parts of it. But I tend to add for emerging tech, I tend to add the so what and who cares to that. mostly because, okay, you have this amazing new idea, like this amazing new technology. You're like, I'm going to change the world, right? And that's what an innovator's mindset. You got to go into it, and it's passion that's driving you. And so you're like working really hard. And what you forget at some point, and naturally, is that there's the rest of the world that doesn't understand what you're doing. And so you're like, well, I made this 100 times faster than the last one. And it's like to you and to your like fellow developers, like that is the most amazing thing. Like they can't believe that ever happened. But the person who's not paid attention to this since the beginning, it has zero relevancy. Like they're like 100 times better. Like, I don't know. So we go to the, like, there is the why, which tends to be a bit of that, like sort of origin story of like, why did you create this? What is it? But I like the so what and who cares, because it's a little mean, which I'm not a mean person, but it sort of cuts through the ego a bit. So I don't do this like publicly. I do this like, and so the who cares.
I'm with like attitude.
No, I'm like, I'm a nice enough, like, I'm not, I want to know these answers. I'm not like aggressively, like, and you trying to have you defend. I'm like, we're going to get to these answers. And so the who cares is really your target audience. I mean, that's like that's marketing and branding 101, although everybody in tech seems to hate marketing and branding, but that's a whole other discussion. But we go like, who's the target audience? And in like, who is going to pay enough? Like who cares? Who cares enough about your potential product that you're going to actually, or service that they're actually going to pay for it maybe. Right. And then the, so what is a great thing to add to those like 500 bullet points that tech companies tend to put of like, it's 100 times faster than this. It's whatever, like statistic that's not necessarily relevant to the potential customer. And so if you almost add the like, so what at the end of those bullet points of like, it's 100 times faster, you go, so what? And then that answer to that is the value. It's like, so that makes your experience doing whatever, it shortens it. Even if you're like, it shortens it by 10 times or whatever, or like that becomes a much more relevant fact or piece of information to your customer than if you were just like, it's 100 times faster. And I think that sort of looking through those lens of not just the why, but the so what and who cares sort of helps. I don't know. It's just like such a, to me, it's like an easy thing to keep on asking over and over again. It's like, right. I have to do that to myself too. I'm like, okay, so what, who cares? And it's a good sort of reminder of tech can be in its own bubble into and of itself and talking to each other and everybody getting really excited. But ultimately, if you want to sort of grow your market to a much, much larger audience, or even within innovators and early adopters, even within developers, you have to answer why are developers going to even care about this? Okay, the developers, well, what kind of developers? What's relevant to them? Are they going to care that's 100 times faster? Well, why are they going to care that's 100 times faster? What is it going to do for them that they have to take time out of their busy schedule where everybody is hyping things up to them all the time, that this particular product or this particular service is worth their time? I tend to generally assume that whoever the audience is really doesn't care at all. And not in a bad way. It's just people are busy and just want to focus their efforts and time on things that are valuable ultimately. I guess I took that with it in writing the book also of how can somebody go back and say, okay, this is helpful. This is helpful. I will say I tried to make it I tend to write in ways that are easily, let's read it quickly. Let's have it, over and done. And this one, I think the ambition was that it is not necessarily it's people have read it are it's a good read, but there's a lot there. And I'm yes. So you can go back, pick the book up again and be oh, okay, that will help me make this decision or that decision as well.
I don't think many people understand that a shelf life of a book is so long, you actually have to write a couple levels over your audience now. So that they will pick it up again and be oh, this applies now.
Yeah, I think that it's been interesting to see that internally and externally, the audience, primary audience has, when you go this is the who cares, right? The primary audience was for the executive outside of the tech industry to understand it. We sort of did the joke. I don't think somebody could read it in this amount of time, although that was the ambition, the executive goes and he's I'm going to have a meeting with some tech company in San Francisco. They're based in New York and they're going to take the book with them and read it in time for that meeting. Now, I think they probably would take the flight there and the flight back, but that's a whole other thing. But I think that they could probably find the sections and read it. So, because the first part of the book tends to be much more of the, laying the groundwork of what are the opportunities of all these technologies. And then the chapter 8, my big long opus in the middle, is all the industries. And then the back half ends up being sort of where could things maybe go wrong, and how to accommodate for it. So, policy and regulations, and not in regulations in a bad word, but in a good word, and then some of the resources. And so the people within the tech industry are I already sort of know the front half. And I'm of course you did, because they're that sort of second layer out. They were not direct target, does not know the technology, but they have found or the few.
It's the first 8 levels of the video game. This is the tutorial. We know.
So internally to tech, they're I already know those first 7 chapters. I just didn't know 8, through 14. And I'm well, that's great, because 8 tends to be something that I like. It's where does it apply? So I basically took where is the metaverse going to be valuable to all target audiences, and then broke it down into those sort of 20 industries. That is why it's my opus in the middle of as many industries as possible. And then the back half tends to be something tech companies don't like to talk about, of okay, my concept idea or whatever it is that's going to change the world actually might have bad repercussions, and I need to plan for that as well. And so I did try to make it I didn't want somebody to read it and be this is horrible. Let's just not live in a non-technical world and whatever. Instead, I was trying to, I insisted with my co-author. I was let's just make it this could happen. Let's figure it out. This could happen. Mm-hmm. Let's figure it out. Because in my mind, it's all going to happen. Let's just look at, you know, sort of let's stress case what the potential is and plan for both.
And honestly, like the first seven chapters are for the people that need to feel welcomed in. Mm-hmm. And the other chapters are for the people that need to solve those problems.
Right? Yes. And I mean, yes and no. If you hear, I mean, at least for me, that I end up hearing with a lot of people who are dealing with sort of trying to educate, you know, lawmakers and government about these technologies. And they are, I mean, I don't know, like the people internally with tech can hardly keep up, let alone sort of government agencies and regulators. They can't either. And they really are, I mean, and I hate to generalize here, but at least what I hear, they tend to need to start in chapter one and go all the way through. And so hopefully it does start. Hopefully those conversations do start. I got asked, although it hasn't really been, like, I'm going to be involved with the World Economic Forum in the future of the metaverse planning. So hopefully I'll be able to have my little influence, my little sort of like tech enthusiast and and sort of like thinking about the future and what's possible for good and for bad. And hopefully I'll be able to help bring along more people into understanding to figure out what to do.
Wait a second. I just need to know, what was it like to tell your family about that?
About what?
You being part of the World Economic Forum.
They have no idea. Like they don't like, they have no, it's like, nope. I've joked a lot about my mother for many years, not knowing the difference between AI and AR and only started recently. So for me, it was really exciting because I keep on talking about the fourth industrial revolution as it relates to the World Economic Forum as like an example of it's not just me who's saying this, like I'm just like one person. I'm like, there are multiple organizations and the one that resonated the most in there, I found the video of when it was sort of announced at Davos or whatever. And it's so relevant now, even though I think it was like 7 years ago that they're like, this is happening. All these things are happening. And I was like, wait, how can a video from 7 years ago talking about a concept that you could watch it today and feel like it came out, you know, last week? Maybe they would have added in generative AI stuff, but like everything else in there, it looks like present day. So it feels a little, there's been a lot of sort of full circle events in the past few weeks for me, which has been nice. Like that being one, another one, like being on the Voices of VR with Kent Bai, because that's what people had said I needed to do when I wrote this. And then last night I was at New York VR, which was sort of the meetup that everybody's like, you need to go to these meetups. If you want to understand these technologies, go to these meetups. And then to like go back and be like, I have a book 6 years later, or my second book. It's sort of nice to, you know, over some time we lost track of time, right? In some ways. And so to have those sort of kind of, you know, the 6 years ago me going like, what is VR? Like, I don't understand VR. To now it's a sort of a nice, I could not have guessed.
So I find that like talking to people about, well, you know, machine learning and AI, as we, I guess, know it, but what they call AI, I see as that's kind of coming forward like VR did in the years past. Like when you were talking about VR before, or if you had to talk to someone who was outside of the industry about AR, you were using examples like Roger Rabbit. You're like, the cartoons are here. And they're like, what? And now people are seeing like ChatGTP rollout and they're interacting with it. And it's easier now for me to have conversations about AI.
Yeah, I think that that's probably where, you know, where things are going. There's a little bit of like, I don't know if you, even though it's not like 100%, like I understand that this is one step away, but like the Google Arts and Culture effort that they, you know, puts it up, like it's sort of like, let's play with these technologies so that you can see what is possible. And I feel like that was sort of one way. Now it's here's ChatGPT. You can do all these things with it. Why don't we play around and see what's possible? You know, all the sort of art creative tools. And, you know, it's almost like deep tech going live. Like, it's like everybody get insight into like this kind of thing is happening. I do think, I mean, I'm also one of those, you know, I like all the sort of vague structures that people give to these technologies and experiences technologies. Mm-hmm. And I feel like in that sort of Gartner hype cycle that we're at like way high expectations. And I said, I feel like it's like doubled. Like, it's sort of like we have $11 billion of open AI expectations. Right. And then this past week has been, I mean, I just feel like I told my classes, I'm like, I could just like redo half of my class and just talk about like what happened in the past week. But I feel like we're at the super high expectations. Like, it's going to change everything for everyone all the time under all circumstances. And then I think that there's going to be the wait a second. And there's a little bit of that's happening, like little hints of it, right? Nobody wants to be like, I do think it's going to change, right? I have no doubt that it's going to change. I think that it's, I think that what we're going to find, which is that sort of like drop, is like where it goes wrong, like what is legal or not legal in it, like who has the rights, like how do you interact? You know, what are, like, I think the goal is to have it be sort of a conversational AI, generative AI kind of experience. At least that's how I tend to think about it. As, and who was I was talking last night, Ben Irwin, who works like in WebXR. And I said that, well, Sam Altman, see, again, it's like the inspiration right now. They're like, he was talking about the idea of there's going to be the next, you know, Google competitor, right? Which then you see this week and it's like, ah, it's happening. But I like this idea of, instead of, you know, taking the, you know, if you ever have to Google something, you're like, how am I going to do the right search term, right? You sort of like, how am I going to do it? Or you're going to go on YouTube and you're like, how am I going to do the right search term? How am I going to find what I want? Well, what if it ends up being some kind of, you know, personified AI conversation where you're like, oh, that's not quite right. Like, can you get me something that's a little bit more like this or a little bit more like that? And then that kind of interaction becomes much more intuitive. But we're not there yet. I mean, trying to do anything with Siri and Alexa right now. But I think that we'll get there. And I also feel like I think of it also through an AR lens, that if you're like, I want to cover my walls with flowers today, like digital flowers, that you say that to the AI personified, whatever it is, like the Google personified. Whatever avatar you decided to give it. And then they're like, okay, what kind of colors of flowers do you want all around your room? And back and forth. And then it's sort of generated, as opposed to me sort of coding it in or developing it in. It's just sort of conversation with, you know, results. And those are so far away from being from happening. Like right now you'd have to figure out, like, are those flowers from somebody who did those designs, and do they have the right to those designs, and do I have to pay for those? Like all of these kinds of things are going to have to happen. And I feel like, so I'm sort of waiting for things to go wrong, and people are already like buzzing about things that are starting to go wrong. And then eventually we'll get to that point of going like, oh, this is how it applies. This is what I do. It has been interesting though to see like academic institutions sort of go, oh, wait a second, we actually are sort of forced once again into advancing our technological understanding, like first with like Zoom schools. And then now it's like, oh no, we have ChatGPT to worry about. What do we do now? And so I would imagine that there has to be like budgeting for, like, we need more people in IT. just to figure these things out. If it, you know, it's like jostled once, like, okay, now we're again, and then there's going to be yet, you know, probably something else soon. And, you know, it is a wave. Like, it is like you go, like, ah, and I do feel like, at least for conversational AI right now, I feel like I'm literally on top of the wave with everyone. And I'm going like, okay, it's going to drop. When's it going to drop? Like, where are the little hints? Cause we're not at that conversation of the so what, who cares? Like, we haven't answered. We've answered some of the who cares, but we haven't done it sort of, or at least I haven't seen it. I'm yet to see it. This is why I guess I'm going to follow the OpenAI and discussion and be like, what's out there and what are people saying where it can apply? And so that I can figure out if and how I can sort of translate it. But that's yet to come. You know, ask me in 6 months and I'll probably know the answer. Today, I'm sort of like, I'm just figuring out.
Well, let's talk about like what is right now, because there's so much information about what's to come. And I got to say, I'm not betting on anybody's crystal ball after 2020. You know what? You could have fooled me a little bit before then, right? You could have slid one by me. No, not right. So much. So right now, when we say metaverse, how would I go to the metaverse?
Well, so this is where I can get into debates with people, which I don't feel like, I mean, I'm so not a sort of debate person, but what the book has of like, we don't know. Like, that's where it sort of comes down to of we know that there's all these technologies all advancing all at the same time. We have the AI, we have VR, we have AR, we have, you know, all the, you know, work internet of things and driverless car, like all of these are sort of interconnected in a way, but they're going to be interconnected in more and more ways that we can't even understand. And so usually the misunderstanding is that when you talk about the metaverse, that people will go, oh, it's VR. And it's like that kind of virtual world. Or they go into like a sandbox Decentraland, you know, online 3D gaming, and they go, oh, that's the metaverse. And I have to go like, no, it's all of them together. All of them together is what that sort of future metaverse is. I usually come at it from a very much of I say like the lens of AR and VR, because I say like you can see it and experience it through that. So that I tend to explain what VR is and explain what, you know, sort of virtual and 3D interactive, you know, sort of spatial worlds are. And then I explain the potential of the future of augmented reality with everything out there sort of mapped and then overlaid and experiencing the real world, but with information. I say, now you take them together. But what you can do is go to a Roblox, Fortnite, Decentraland, so on and so forth, and experience it, granted in 2D, of like, what might it be like? Like, what might that kind of 3D experience be like? But then you have to sort of, in your mind, go, okay, now I'm going to have to put that in multiple dimensions in the real world. But I think you can learn a ton from it. And so I wouldn't call it, you know, some people debate, like, do you call it like the little M metaverse versus the big M metaverse? And I'm like, it's like saying that Google is the internet. It's like, no, you know, or saying like one, like that's Amazon is the internet. It's like, no, it's not. It's like, even, and I'm giving it like lots of credit and lots of like value, but I'm like, it's just, you can look at individual parts, but ultimately it's the culmination of all of them that is going to create this sort of new experience. So you can go and learn about and experience different kinds of like advanced AR. You can try amazing VR, not all VR, amazing VR. And you get like really good sixed off, like super creative people VR, not just like, I'm like, I say to my students, like, please don't do anything like a roller coaster or whatever. Like, that just makes me sick. I don't want to do it. So like, don't think that that's the future of VR. If you do, then you're totally wrong. And go and learn about AI and go and play in these virtual worlds and go and create multiple avatars and all that. And then sort of sit with it and go, okay, if I put it all together, like if they all sort of work seamlessly and integrated, which is not going to be perfect, but if you do, like, what does that mean and how does that change and shift things? And that's sort of the fun of it, because we don't know, which means that there's lots of opportunities. So I can tell my students, like, go and make companies or create things or figure out, once you understand those and once you understand they come together, you could create a company that brings two of them together or three of them together in a way that hasn't happened before and change the future. And I think that it takes a little while for them to realize that it's possible. Like, you know, if I could predict the future and have like multiple, like, you just take this part and this part and this part, and then you go here, and then here's the competitor to Google. Like, that's what, not that many people could do that in the entire world. But maybe if I teach some of them to do it, or I help explain with the book, that somebody eventually will make, you know, make those choices or decisions.
I totally agree. And I think that that gives more of a understanding of the problem you're trying to solve. Like, in my mind, I go back to like 1995. I'm listening to the dial-up internet, like, make that crazy noise as it connects. And then my friends and I were standing around a computer and we've logged on to a BBS, to like a little chat room that only has like four or five lines that you can get in. People are getting busy signals because they're trying to get into. And then for us, at that moment, to say, yeah, this is the internet, was wrong. It wasn't the case, but it was a little experience that could have shown us one, like, kind of one lens of what the internet will be, but you have to understand it's going to be a billion lenses.
Right. And that's sort of where I want somebody to get, because I do feel like when I started working in tech, I realized that there were a lot of these sort of barriers to entry. And I mean, like, I know that's very like business school world, but it's like acronym after acronym after acronym. And I usually have to take a couple of classes or take like conversations with people of just like, okay, let's learn, like, a HUD is a heads up display. And they're like, it's not really that complicated of a concept. It's just, you don't have to put something on your face. And they're like, oh, it's like, I just have to like break down that communication, like all those terms, so that you can have a conversation about what is this all about, really? And it takes a little bit of patience to do it, which I have, because I know it's fun once you get there. You know, I know it's fun when somebody figures it out. I remember doing that of, like, I went back, this is a few years ago, to like where I went to college, and I was sitting with somebody who was a art history professor, and she's like, ugh, this technology has nothing to do with me. And I was like, ha, ha, ha. And then started like asking, well, what do you study? It's like, oh, large scale sculpture. And I was like, oh, this is fun. And then I could just explain, you know, sort of photogrammetry and augmented reality. And okay, well, what if you could get, you know, scans of these big large scale sculptures, and then you can have your students go and look at them up close in detail during your class? Doesn't that change the way that you teach, or change the way that people could understand what is possible? And what if you created something that was like sort of a larger scan or video, you know, like VR experience of that actual location that they could go and walk around and understand? Well, doesn't that change what you do? And you could just tell she was like, oh, like, that does apply to what I do. And I was like, there you go. That's why, those are my little magic tricks of, yep, like figuring out what's relevant, that somebody understands, and then like getting them there. And I can do, I said, it's like a one-on-one, or like a one to like, what's your target group audience?
That's great. And I think that more people should understand the value of the book that you just released on that specific path. Like, right now, if you're kind of looking from the outside and you're like, oh, wait a second, I thought the metaverse was something I could do now and like was completed and like all of these things, you can now realize that this will be a guide to what is possible based on how we've seen other technologies. And it's coming from people that are in the inside, right? Like, I don't think they understand how long you have to wait for an idea to be born, right? Like, what are elephants, like 2 years? Like, when these ideas start here and now get to the point where you're talking to me about them, like, how long have you been waiting?
Yeah. Well, I think that that's where and this is, I always like the pace of innovation is accelerating, you know? And so there are, it's like, it does feel like there's another one and there's another one and here's another thing and here's another thing. And so that can get overwhelming. I mean, that gets overwhelming for me. And I love this stuff. And I'm like, wait, like, it's like you're hit by another wave and hit by another wave. And you're like, I need time to breathe. Give me a second. And I think that understanding that that's sort of what is coming, then you can, you know, take that breath, figure out how it's relevant, figure out that, you know, what I found more and more is the people who are the most knowledgeable about these technologies are the ones to admit that they don't know everything. So if somebody, and this is, which is like counterintuitive, right? Because you have to say that you know what's going to happen and you know, and you can predict the future if you're going to get like venture capital investment, if you're going to get the, go to the stock market, if you're going to like, and say like, we need like growth in our, shareholder value. So we're going to have to say like, we can foresee the path, but then behind closed doors, it's sort of like, we don't quite know. Like we're And so, but to go, okay, like in order to get more people on board from a customer sort of standpoint, you need to still be able to explain it and still be able to explain that there is some uncertainty involved. And that is innovation. So there are going to be some people who are more comfortable with it. Obviously that sort of like that diffusion of innovations, I think we're here, like that sort of diffusion of innovations curve. And then there are other people who are less comfortable with it and, you know, that's okay. But because the innovation's happening faster and faster, there have to be sort of more people are forced into understanding of like, we don't know yet. Like, that's okay. That's okay. We just don't know yet, but that's okay. I guess it's the, but that's okay part that sometimes, feels like the most revelatory to people outside of tech of like, wait, so it's okay that we don't know? And it's like, yes, it's not consumer packaged goods, right? It's not, you know, I was in the like media and entertainment. It's not like media and entertainment space. It's not like we're going to have a next tentpole and it's going to be this. And then we're going to have another tentpole. We don't know what the, the show or the movie or the whatever is. We don't know what the next release of Oreos is going to be yet, but that's okay. Like, this is just like the world shifts and then the world shifts again. And you just have to be like, like, and think like, oh, that's really interesting. How does it apply to my business? And realize that usually that tech company can't quite communicate that right off the gate. So that's where I said, we circle back to me going like, okay. Let me try to see if I can do it. And then I've gotten sort of better at it over time.
I love it. So you just roll it back to who cares and so what?
Yes. And the funny thing is it's like, it's deceptively simple. That's like writing the value proposition of your company, right? Which, you know, basic sort of branding. And you go, oh, okay, I just have to fill in like this one sentence or these two sentences of like, my company is valuable to this target audience for these reasons, which is better, you know, whatever your value proposition is. And you're like, oh, that shouldn't be hard. And it's like, that's why there's entire branding agencies that exist and make millions of dollars, is because they're trying to get to that one sentence. And so the, so what, who cares is meant to be sort of simple, but the answers are difficult to find. But it's for me, it's, you know, people in the tech often talk about product market fit, right? They talk about like, I'm going to make this technology and we're going to determine the product market fit and whatever. And so the product, you're going to make the product and then market fit. Like, market fit is marketing, like branding, marketing, product market. And so I'm actually like, they can work on the product, I'm going to work on the market. And then you put them together. And they're like, I hate marketing, I hate branding. I'm like, oh, it's like, no, we're not going to change fundamentally. I'm not going to say like, oh, you made this for aerospace, let's put it in medical. Like, no, we're going to still go. We're just going to figure out within aerospace, who are the different categories of totally. Who you're going after? Who are the decision makers? What's of value to them? What's the way that you're going to make sure that you have most likelihood of success in explaining whatever it is that you're doing? And so that's where it is sort of funny, where I get the, like within tech, the extreme like anger and defensiveness of like, I represent all of advertising. It's like, I do not represent all of advertising. I actually represent like the market
part. Not a bad poster child, right? Like when you come down to representing the marketing, I think you could. And when I think really they should focus on building the rocket, but understand they need a guidance system. Because if you end up in the wrong part of space, you die. Okay.
Well, I guess I'd like to say also the sort of all the different, when I try to use the tech terms to apply to marketing terms, that it's, I guess I believe in sort of beta testing messaging, you know, of, okay, we think it's this group, and we think it's this group. Like, let's just see how that feels. If they like it, if they don't like it, and then we'll like change it.
Mm-hmm.
It's generally just words,
but a lot of people pictures. Don't even understand that's part of it. Like, if you're gonna send a rocket there, don't you think you should point a telescope there first, maybe?
Well, you can and you can't. This is what's so hard about, I guess, building and creating for the future, right? You do have to have the visionary who's going like, this is what I see for the future. Like, you have this sort of, and I hate to bring them up, but like the stereotypical like Steve Jobs-esque type. Right. It's like, I see the future, you know, and it is that like thought leader, right? The thought leader has to do it. I did a whole thing in my class about like thought leaders and thought leadership. And it's like, before you have a product, like, need thought leader who's going to say like, this is where we're going. But, and so then you have that sort of, I guess, the, like North Star of like, we're going to create a product because this is where we're going. But I do think that over and over again, then you just sort of like lose sight of that person it's for and their needs, because they can't articulate it, right? If you're creating the future, they can't say, I'm looking for augmented reality glasses and experiences. Like, they
don't have that problem yet to solve.
But they also don't even know. And so you have to go and figure out and understand, like sort of empathize enough with them, with your potential audience, to sort of make the guesses of like what might be relevant. And so it is that sort of projection of what they might say, which is different than if you're launching a consumer packaged good, because you could be like, here's our new kind of cookies, and you bring it to a target like market group, and they're like, oh, this tastes good, or whatever. I mean, I don't know exactly, but I know with media, you have like the dials and the up and down. It's like, what seems good, what doesn't seem good. But with emerging tech, you can't quite do focus groups before a technology has ever existed.
Totally.
So you have to do, you know, maybe you could do the focus group of like, here's your, you know, the third generation of whatever you're going to do, because they sort of understand the first and the second. But I don't think it means that you have to like throw out trying to guess and understand and what maybe that target would be interested in. And that's where I also say I do this thing like forensic branding. Like, I try to go backwards, be like, what are they trying to say? What are they trying to understand? What is what seems relevant? What are the things that happen at trade shows for whatever industry? What are the conversations that are in the most popular podcasts? And then you go, okay, does that kind of conversation align with what you're trying to sell? Yes or no? And that, you know, that gives you a pretty good idea of what people within the industry find important. And then, and you may be wrong, but honestly, when you just have to test, you just have to figure it out. like, does that sound good? Does that not sound good? And then you can go as far, and some people do this with the product market fit, of like having those conversations, meeting with those exact people. And you know, I'm sort of a believer in the flexibility of all of it. If like, you can go, like, go as, you know, in like in depth or like high level as you want, but don't ignore it. Like, don't say everyone will figure it out. The product is good enough. It will all make sense to everyone. And I'm like, even if it's like cursory, like I go and do a little bit of research. I say like, here are a few bullets about like what all of the aerospace industry is interested in. I mean, you could subdivide the aerospace, but it's like, but I'm like, okay, here are the things that keep on popping up in their trades, in their whatever. Then you sort of go, oh, okay. I didn't realize that that was, you know, that was sort of the most important. And that can change the way that you explain what you do, you know. The feedback I got from the companies that I've worked with has generally been like that, you know, that it's not changing what the product is, right? It's not changing it. It's just slightly altering the way, like what gets bubbles to the top from an information standpoint, even though it's all sort of the same. It's just like, oh, this part is the thing that's going to resonate the most. And people aren't, you know, they're not like looking at it like, oh, she changed it. No, it's the opposite. They're like, oh, now much more efficient in explaining what this is. So you use that example of like a bridge, right? And so it's almost like the bridge was really like awkward and took a long time. And then now it's like just more efficient. It's still doing the same thing. It's just faster and more efficiently doing it. You could think of it as narrowing that chasm of crossing the chasm, but I do work within developer communities, and so that doesn't quite work. But I think that bridge of you know, making it more efficient, making it more effective, can happen, and often is ignored.
Well, you can definitely hear the empathy in your understanding. You really understand both sides, where these startups are coming from, where this audience is. And I think that is exactly what people need to hear in order to pick up your book, Metaversed. We really appreciate you joining us today for Leadership Line of Sight. This has been Samantha G. Wolf, founder of Pitch Forward, author of Metaverse, and excellent human being. I really appreciate you coming to chat with me today.
Thank you for having me.
My name is Taylor, and thank you for listening to Leadership Line of Sight.